Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome back to the Colin Karcher Podcast, live in studio here in Salt Lake City. Bringing the best information on parenting, technology, and raising your kids in this crazy world they're growing up in. Thank you so much for tuning in today here on Friday, September 11th, 2020. Can you believe it's been 19 years? Joe Dennis is in studio with me. What's up, Joe?
Hey.
Can you believe it's been 19 years?
It's nuts.
September 11th. Where were you on September 11th? Do you remember?
I want you to guess what grade I was in.
I don't even want to guess. Okay.
I was, honestly,
19 years ago. Kindergarten, maybe?
Ouch. Middle school. I was in middle school. Like 8th grade, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, that was interesting.
Yeah.
Teachers not realizing how they are traumatizing youth.
Yeah. Even more.
Yeah.
We're going to watch these videos, the live news now.
Oh, goodness.
Did they do that?
Yeah.
Turn on the news.
Every single teacher except... shout out to Mr. College, my math teacher.
He was a little bit more aware.
He was like, yeah, that's
or
nice.
Unaware.
We're going to do math stuff.
Jeez.
I'm pretty sure that was an unproductive class. Pretty sure.
He's like, listen up. A plus B squared equals C squared. And you're like, can we watch the towers, please? You're
right. Yeah, that's pretty
so
accurate.
Other teachers had like the TV on. Yep. And they're like, we're all watching this.
Totally.
Free class. That was, I can't believe how long ago it was. I think I was 18, freshman year of college or something like that. And I just remember walking up the stairs and the TV was on, which it usually wasn't in our house. Like there wasn't like I was just like, what's going on? They're like, my mom's like, terrorists. I'm like, where? But geez. Anyways, so
yeah,
it's a day that we will never forget. And a lot of people listening always know where they're at. But I felt like I wanted to kick off this second episode with you as with the biggest buzzkill I possibly could.
Oh, sure. So great.
Let's talk about terrorists and death and stuff.
Yeah, so nice.
Last time you were here, I gifted you, as I do with my guests, a pair, and you're wearing them.
Yeah,
of these low top J. Those look good, dude. Mm-hmm. Low top J1s. And this is like is that magenta? What color?
Sure. We'll call that. That's good enough.
Iced. Raspberry, I think is what the Sherman
yes.
Williams would be.
It's iced raspberry.
And this time, I don't know if you...
Is that an iced raspberry?
This no, is not iced raspberry.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if you're like me. I know you knew this about me. A honey connoisseur.
Oh, well,
that I'm gifting you some
nice.
Most amazing honey you will ever have.
Okay.
And I think that's like 2 tablespoons worth. So that should
nice.
Be... That should be... Joe Dennis is joining me today. Joe, if you didn't hear the first podcast with him, Joe is an amazing therapist.
I agree.
A virtual therapist right now, but usually in person. And so excited to have you come back.
Yeah.
You are wearing a shirt today that I want to share with guests that says hate is not a mental illness.
That's right.
Mind blown. What is hate then if it's not a mental illness, right? If you're filled with hate, there's something wrong with you, right?
I mean, you could argue that, sure. If I were to speak more generally, so hate is a symptom of something much greater. Oftentimes, in my opinion, it's a lack of information.
Okay. Yeah.
That's what spurs a lot of hatred. Miscommunication, misunderstanding.
Yeah.
Poor education, and generally a failure to try and look at something different than what you think you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why what am I saying?
I don't know.
Blech. There's a lot of hate right now, it feels like.
Sure.
Is it amplified right now, or has it always existed and it's just being filmed?
Oh, yes.
And now we're seeing how bad it's always been.
Now, what I would say, I think people right now are in a very reactive state.
Yeah. Okay.
A lot of people are freaked out. And so we like to think of ourselves as like above animals, but really we're all just dogs.
And that's, you know what, that I feel like to some dogs that is actually a slap in their face.
That might be.
Have you met people like whenever I hear people say like, oh, people are good. You know, people are good. And I'm like, have you met people? Like, that's kind of a broad generalization.
We have this instinctual drive that dogs also have.
Yeah.
It's in our midbrain. And that is this desire to create greater relief and possibility, that is relief for the future.
Yeah.
And avoid suffering. So when our frontal lobe gets shut down, that's when we are like really emotional. Sure. That's when we're in physical or emotional pain.
Okay.
We are running off of our midbrain. And so we're frantically then trying to create relief. And sometimes that's done by yelling at people.
Yeah.
Or telling them to do their research.
Do your research.
I hate that response.
Do you get that a lot as a therapist?
I have gotten that.
And,
have
and you're like, that. Do you know what I do? Like, I'm do like, you know how I got
I'm
here?
Like, you know what? No, I'm not going to re-research, actually.
Yeah. Those are my favorite like retweets when someone's like ripping on someone for something and they're like, actually, they're like, you wouldn't even know this. It's like, I actually authored the book that you're referencing. You're it's like, oh,
thanks.
Wah, wah. So continue with that.
Yeah. So we get into these reactive states. When we're in a reactive state, we're essentially thinking like a dog that is in pain. So we're lashing out, we're biting, even if people are trying to help.
Yeah,
people
yeah.
are trying to connect, to educate, to whatever. We just get in a very pain-based, reactive set of actions. So,
and that's
the so U.S. right now.
That we are a bunch of mad dogs.
Yes.
what do you? Let's, we don't have to get political or anything, but like, what do you think's fueling all of this? Is it is it just because of the perfect storm, like quarantine, pandemic, constant chaos in the news? And let's not let the news off the hook because talk about goodness. Stoking all of the fears 24/7.
Yeah.
Is it just because we've all been, we were locked up for so many months, so we're already ticked off and pissed off and all this stuff, and then plus the news and then plus all this, like, is everyone just kind of like letting it all out, just everything all at once, just
yeah,
anger,
we're,
hatred?
We're frantic. We don't know what to do. And so really there's a whole lot of fear. If I were to boil it down, there's a lot of fear. There's a degree of sadness, but I'd say fear is primarily the like thematic emotion going on right now.
Yeah.
As for the media, think about what sells.
Yeah.
There's some interesting research on protests and what makes an effective protest.
Okay.
And so this is all research based.
So, do your research, Joe.
Yeah. Feel free to DM me and say, do my research. I'll just ignore it.
Yeah.
I'll like it. I'll like
and
it.
And to DM Joe, well. It is at Joe Dennis Counseling. Just kidding.
It's joedennis.counsels. That's what Thank it is. You very much.
Joe Dennis. Yeah. Get your get your hate mail ready for this.
Yes.
One.
Yes. So if there is a peaceful protest, it is purely peaceful. It is not likely to be effective unless it is done in a mass amount, so all over the U.S. This is because it has to get public attention. It has to get media coverage. And if people are being peaceful, that doesn't get media coverage. It's boring.
That's true. Yeah. But that's what everyone's demanding, though. They're like, we don't like how you're protesting peacefully by kneeling at football games. They're like, do something that's disrespectful. It's like, okay, we'll walk quietly. They're like, not that either.
It's yeah,
like, it's should we burn down a building? They're like, no, definitely not that.
Right.
And it's like, what do you want us to do then?
Right? Yeah, and so the same research shows that if the peaceful protest turns into looting, fires, whatever, that type of realm, understandably, it loses the momentum. It loses the point of the protest, or even becomes countering to what the protest is trying to go through. Yeah. Now, what makes the most effective protest?
Oh, right, my gosh. We have been waiting for this.
Right, ready for it?
We've been waiting for this. Is everyone listening?
Oh, nice.
There we go.
What makes the most effective protest is when there are peaceful protesters and there is police brutality.
Okay.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Explain this.
So honestly, just use a little bit of logic here. What is going to make an interesting news story?
Sex.
Well, that too. But I...
Wait, where are we? Sorry.
So if you have these people are just who are peacefully trying to get their point across, and they're being hurt because of it, it is going to be fantastic news.
Because
it sells.
Because people feel sympathy towards them. I
totally.
Mean, they were just
we don't like
their own
people
business.
Being hurt unless we're sociopaths. So Yeah.
So they've got to, there's got to be peaceful protesting and then police brutality.
Technically, yeah.
Which is really sad. There was one of the probably most shared videos today or yesterday I saw on Twitter was a very peacefully protesting man. I don't know where it was, but and a policeman was trying to arrest him. And the kid's like, what did I do? And he's like, because this, and he was getting very physical with this kid. And the kid said, why, what'd I do? Why am I being arrested? This police officer was getting so mad. He was freaking out. And it turned out it's because he commented on the police officer had a mask that had the flag with the thin blue line. Mm. And this kid said something about how that is disrespecting the flag.
Oh.
And so, of course, that was the one. Now, everything else that happened peacefully beyond that clip, no one shared. There's no media on that stuff anymore. Like, I mean, the peaceful stuff, like, you have to, like, find that stuff now.
Yeah.
But that one clip, because the cop got mad and he started losing his cool, like, that's all anyone thinks about.
I would, to be a police officer right now would be kind of terrifying. You'd have to be a little hyper-vigilant of what you're doing, for sure.
Every camera is on you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's like, who was it? Chris Rock said, he's like, you know what? The whole, like, there's a couple bad apples, which there is in every industry, right? I'm sure there's some really crappy therapists. I'm sure there's some really crappy whatever it is I do. Therapists, they're like, you know what your problem is? He struck me. It's called strike violent therapy session.
Shaking and belittling therapy.
Shaking and belittling therapy.
It's a little controversial.
I learned it in Sweden. no, but when Chris Rock, he's like, Swedish. You know, with the police officer. We're going to talk about something about parenting in a minute. The police officer, when he said, you can't just have a few bad apples when you're a cop, sadly. You know, it's like when he said the pilots, you know. Yeah. It can't be like, you know, most of our pilots like landing planes, but we got a few bad apples, right?
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's a crappy time right now. What is your thought, just because someone was asking me about this, what is your thought on the whole, like, public shaming cancel culture going on right now? I would like to hear from Joe Dennis, Doc Councils, about this. So if you have any hate mail, send it to @JoeDennis.
Great.
Doc Councils.
There is a place to confront and to question. But to flat out cancel what someone's saying, to shout them down, is not an effective form of debate. It's not an effective form of speech.
It gets headlines.
True.
But it's not going to change anything, is what you're saying.
No. Yeah. It just makes people angry.
Okay.
If someone, I teach my clients this, especially the teenagers I work with.
Yeah.
The Socratic method.
Okay.
And so this is, I'll instruct my clients when they get a physical sensation that I call an irk.
I have been irked.
So that's the physical embodiment of offense or you're wrong, but it's, you know, in your gut.
Yeah, yeah.
An irk. In that moment, you're wanting to slip into a defensive state, to argue your point, to attack the other person, pause, pull back, and step into a questioning state. I've heard this called a student mindset or a beginner brain.
Okay.
Some philosophies call this wise doubt.
Wise doubt.
Yeah, that's my preferred phrase.
Wise doubt. That's like sophomore.
Right?
Okay.
So from that state, you're then asking questions about the individual. You're getting to know who you're talking to. This is a very important point that gets lost in social media.
Yeah.
Why it's a little annoying when someone tells me to do my research. It's because I did. And if they knew who I was, they probably would not say that.
Yeah. And their avatar is a bald eagle draped in a flag carrying a McRib in its clutches.
That'd actually be kind of great. you ask questions to get to know the person you're talking to. That way you know your audience, you know what phrasing to use, all this stuff. Then you start asking questions about the material.
Okay.
So as you're asking questions about whatever the issue is, you're not trying to prove your point. You're trying to investigate their point. Mm-hmm. This is what lawyers do.
Yeah.
So
good lawyers.
Yeah, true.
Not the ones who do the belittling and whatever therapy.
Right? Yeah, shaking and belittling.
Shake and belittle.
Yeah. That better not be a thing. So
I'm Googling everything you're saying, by the way.
Good.
Shaking. You know what? Actually, shake and belittle was started by my great-grandfather. No wonder. There we go. Shake and belittle.
So we'll get a session scheduled later.
Okay, this is good stuff.
So from this point where you're asking questions about their argument, you're then looking for little holes in their argument. Now, if, as you point out these holes, if the person you're talking to is responding effectively and saying, oh, well, this little hole in the argument is explained by this thing over here or this philosophy, or mm-hmm. you can understand it this way, well, then chances are they might actually be right.
Yeah.
And then you have learned something from it and you haven't had to, you know, sacrifice your ego because you were all uppity.
Yeah. Does anyone do that anymore, though? Honestly, one of my favorite things, I don't go on. I for the last two months, like, have not been on Facebook at all.
Mm.
Maybe a couple times. And whenever I would go on it before, like, you know, as things were getting really crazy with the protests and riots and things like that, and everyone's mad about everything. No one, you know, they're just mad, right? I would go on there and you'd see comments on, you know, someone talking about something political or something that, of course, is going to stoke a lot of different controversies. Mm-hmm. And then, boom, here comes the comment section and everyone's like screaming at each other. And I started noticing that if one person said something and then or responded with like an actual adult type response of like, oh, hey, I didn't really think of it that way, or I can understand. No. Everyone below them is like, wow, it's so nice to see someone respond like that. And it's like, have we lost all civility?
Yes.
Everywhere.
Well, that's not the type of communication that you do in an open forum. This is something that you do one-on-one. And so if you genuinely wanted to try using this approach on social media, I mean, you can give it a try, but it has to be done through direct messaging in this case.
Where you say, hey, and I do that when I used to post a bunch on Facebook and people started fighting about stuff. I would always be like, hey, do you guys want to find a room? You know,
Pretty much, I bet
if you two started talking like in a private messenger chat, you'd probably be best friends after this is all over, right? Mm-hmm. But can you not do it here? Because people today, one thing I've noticed, especially, and I think a lot of it's because of the media, freaking media.
Yeah.
No one's really formulating their own thoughts and opinions anymore.
It's
always like, there's this tweet I read a long time ago where it was hilarious. The guy's like, hey, what do I think about stuff? Well, hang on. Let me watch news for a bit and then figure out what the general vibe of the internet is. And then I'll get back to you. And that's how it is now.
Yeah, that's pretty accurate.
No one really has their own chain of thought. Like, it's like we hear something and then it's like, let me listen to the pundits and the speakers and the podcasters and the Joe Rogans and the Tucker Carlsons and whoever's out there. Let me absorb the information I just was given, which we should be able to figure out ourselves. Like truth, fake, real, not honest, dishonest, whatever. Mm-hmm. But it's like, I have to listen to my people who share their opinions with a lot of spitting and fire.
Right.
And then based on what they say, I will then basically just regurgitate what they just said as my opinion.
Yeah. Echo chambers aren't that.
Yeah.
Aren't a very good way to, you know, formulate your argument.
Yeah. And that's happening, though. And it's ruining.
Oh, totally.
And it's ruining families.
Yeah.
Confirmation bias.
There you go.
Echo chambers. So what are your thoughts from a smart guy? And I was, when you mentioned Socratic method, I was thinking to myself, I was like, you know, the Socratic method, obviously also known as the method of eclectic method of Socratic. I'm just
sure.
I'm thinking this off the top of my head.
Yeah,
of
course.
Is a form of cooperative argument of dialogue between individuals. I'm reaching here back in college based on asking, answering questions to stimulate critical thinking. Critical thinking?
Oh, goodness.
When is the last time anyone's done this, right?
Yeah. This is something that used to be specifically taught in forms of rhetoric back in high school, and that somehow got lost. My wife, actually, she works for the U. And
The U, which for those who don't live in Utah, is the what?
University of Utah.
There's so many U's in that. Yes. They just said, just use the first letter.
Yeah. And they've been through training for working with Gen Z.
Okay.
And so that is, it's argued that the oldest of these are around like 24, 25. The youngest, I think, would be in their teens, like early teens.
Okay.
Now, with the Gen Z, I'm not entirely sure how this has happened, but that critical thinking, consequential reasoning that has been learned in like around high school is now occurring in college. So that means that these people that are expected to be able to go out on their own, be independent, are not able to.
Interesting.
Because we need that consequential reasoning, being able to look at pros and cons.
Yeah.
And that's what lets us budget. That's what lets us, you know, not die. that's being learned in early 20s.
Yeah.
That's not good.
No, we got to learn it sooner than that.
No, yeah, that's a big problem. So,
what is this causing? Like, if you're thinking about Gen Zers now, and for those who don't know what Gen Z is, Gen Z is like pretty much the digital internet, social media kids, right? Mm-hmm. The kids have had internet since the womb. Dr. Gene Twenge calls it the iGeneration. This is the group people have had Wi-Fi since birth, internet forever. And you can always tell like how old someone is when you ask them, what was your first email address?
Oh,
mine was a Yahoo. That's how old I am. What was your Gmail probably? Right?
Nope. I was a Yahoo.
Were you Yahoo too? Oh, cool. Yeah. So, you can always tell Gen Zers, with that, but, how is this impacting Gen Z, for the kids who are listening to me, they're in college. How is it impacting them? What are the worries we have?
Well, so there's a lot of issues that are popping up around effectively confronting people. So being able to address issues between one another. Mm-hmm. When someone crosses my boundaries, if I am in Gen Z, I am more likely to just like passive aggressively cut them out of my life.
Just ghost them emotionally.
Instead of actually, discuss, hey, when this happened, I felt this way. Could we do this differently next time?
Instead of just like, Jeff doesn't hang out with us anymore. What happened to Jeff?
Oh, he's gone.
He's gone.
He's dead to me now.
We don't know what Jeff said, but.
So that's one thing that's happening more.
Yeah.
Now, if someone in authority needs to be confronted, that is even worse. The lack of communication with members of authority has, for whatever reason, diminished. Yeah. I'm not sure what happened there. These college students not knowing, not knowing to go to their professors to say, hey, I need help with this. I need help understanding this.
Yeah.
I don't understand this grade, whatever the issue is. And then if they have to confront their professor, nah. The only way that's happening is going to be, again, passive aggressive, rate my professor.
or if mom comes in, mom, fix this. Come on.
Oh, goodness. Yeah, that's the other thing is because there's that lack of, I shouldn't say that.
Yeah.
Decreased critical thinking, consequential reasoning.
Yeah.
There is more reliance on parents to do things for them.
Which is not their fault either at all. This is the generation that was raised by a bunch of lawnmower parents and snowplow parents is what we call them, right? Just take every potential struggle out of my kid's way. I will take the brunt of it. And then that makes me a good parent because my kids never struggle. Then they get to college and their professor says one thing they don't like and they're like, peace out. I'm just going to go play Fortnite all day.
Yep.
And then there goes my scholarship, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I was thinking, one of the tweets I read, where, talking about Gen Z, and the guy said something like, I love Gen Zers because they will be too nervous to ask the waiter for a side of ranch, but will body slam a cop at a protest, like that same person, right?
Yeah.
And it's amazing to watch. Like these kids, and I love Gen Z, these kids like so polite, so kind, they tip like that could be their last $20 they have for a month. And they're going to tip their waiter, even if their waiter spitting their food and suck, like here's a 20% tip, don't want to confront anyone face to face on this stuff. And like you're saying,
right.
Thinking, but if they have to body slam a police officer at a protest, like who cares? Dude? Yeah. It's like, don't ask for ranch, body slam a cop. Right.
Well, and there's also this, I think that this comes from social media. Like it would make sense to me. There's a lot of fear about stating one's actual personal opinions.
Yeah.
So there's
because that comes back to the cancel culture, right?
Yep.
Anything you say is thrown, retweet, share, DM. It's just like you can't.
Yeah.
Everyone has a target on their back right now.
Chances are I've said something already that if you take it out of context, I'm screwed.
I've already DM'd you 4 times.
Probably.
Since we started.
Probably.
Dear Joe, do your research next time.
Oh,
so that's an issue obviously causing, that causes some stress. I can't even imagine if I was back in high school, college, and it's like, P.S., anything you say publicly and sometimes privately is going to be shared somewhere for everyone to ridicule.
It's like everyone is on reality TV.
Oh my gosh.
Can you imagine?
I think that's probably one of the reasons why TikTok's taken over so much because it's such a waste of time and it's so brain dead, brainless, just like, you know what? I'm just going to do this stupid dance and just be stupid and lip sync. Like, you can't cancel that, right? Well, maybe we can.
I don't know.
At least...
Well, apparently there's some things that really should be canceled on TikTok.
Which we will lead into in a second. Which we'll go into right now. TikTok this last week during the month of suicide prevention, which is September, 4 days, 4 or 5 days before the actual national international suicide prevention day of course, if you follow me, I've shared all about it, let a video of a man ending his life, dying through suicide via suicide with a gun, live streamed on Facebook. Someone uploaded TikTok, shared like crazy. And I didn't actually watch the video, thank heavens, but it was all over the For You page. Mm-hmm. And so many of the For You page videos, which is like the Discover page, which you cannot avoid, were people talking about it, sharing it, which of course to a kid is doing what? If every video you see is like, I can't believe he just did that. Did I just see that? I can't believe I just saw that. What is a 13-year-old kid going to do?
It's kind of, it's in a way, it's the same thing of... okay, you go into the fridge, you go, oh, something smells terrible. Something's rotting in here. And now everybody around you also has to smell it. Yeah, it's a similar kind of effect here.
You know this is, it's, or my wife, whenever she, like, if we go someplace and she eats something gross, she's like, oh my gosh, that was disgusting. You got to try it. Here, try it. I'm like, no, but I still do.
But you do, right. It's this shared trauma.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, if there was some, well, not just kid, teenagers as well as young adults that tend to be the ones on TikTok, if they're seeing most of their friends, if not all their friends, are viewing this and posting reaction videos, well, then there's kind of a
FOMO almost.
Yeah, right? there's an underlying pressure to do the same.
Yeah,
which really is that old phrase of if all your friends jumped off a bridge, would you? Yes. Yes, you would. Because all 100%. Of your friends jumped off the bridge.
It's got to be fine. And if I don't jump, like, what, they're going to make fun of me. What am I going to
exactly.
miss out on? What's down there? Why are they jumping in the first place?
Exactly.
They got to be jumping to something. A word I heard someone message me, and they said TikTok is engaging in trauma bonding. And that word, bonding. And I sent that word to you, and I was like, what does this mean? I think I know what it means, but explain. A lot of this is happening through social media.
Yeah.
Trauma bonding, and trauma doesn't have to be watching a man end his life live.
But
on
definitely is.
That's that on the spectrum. That's probably one of the highest, right?
That would be up there for sure.
What is this whole trauma bonding concept?
Yeah. So I had not thought of this being applied to social media, but it makes sense. It fits.
Neither have I until just then. Yeah.
So prior to this, I had used the term trauma bonding and read about trauma bonding in terms of abusive relationships primarily.
Yeah.
So that's probably the easiest way to see this being applied, where there's typically there's, let me think if I remember here, there's like four stages. There's a point where, you know, tension is building. There's usually some like manipulative behaviors.
For sure.
And then there's an explosion. There's an event. And that's abuse. That's something traumatic. But then there's some sort of resolution, some sort of apology, some inkling of hope. Like,
sure.
Look, I'm in a group now of people with similar issues. And it's like, oh, great. Yeah. Fantastic. And then they quit doing that. But everything else seems nice. And so there's this sort of down period.
Sure. Yeah.
And then tensions build again, and then there's an event, and et cetera, et cetera. So it's this abusive cycle. And there's something about that, it probably falls under what we call random reinforcement. It's what makes a slot machine addictive.
Yes.
Where it's paying out at random intervals in large amounts and small amounts. But that moment of release, that moment of quiet, it makes it addictive.
Yeah. You're not addicted in the slot machine example. You're not addicted to winning. You're kind of addicted to the process.
Yes. The ritual.
Yep. The feeling of, Oh crap, I lost. This sucks. But I could win. And when you win, you're like, booyah. And then the dopamine dumps. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, I'm going to keep doing this. It's why people still golf that aren't professional. I don't understand this. Like, I golf. Like,
I've tried. A couple times a year. I just don't understand.
You go, you have eight crappy holes. Then on the ninth, you hit like this perfect drive. And you're like, I think I'm going to go pro. Right? It's like the same people who do a high school play a normal person does a play and they're like, wow, that was sure fun. But then like the psycho person's like, I'm going to do this for the rest for psycho a career. Person. And you're like, no, that's not how it works. If you're in your high school musical production of Brigadoon, like you're not going to go to Hollywood the next day. But this trauma bonding, I think parents need to really dive more into this. When I hear stories of teenage girls, especially like at 14, 13, having their phone taken away as a punishment for a bad grade or for talking back to mom, and the phone is taken away, and the child's not underage woman, a child, 12, 13, her brain says, I can't have the phone. I'm going to go end my life. And that happens a lot. And with boys too, a lot of teen suicides, as we talk about suicide prevention month.
Yeah.
If you want to help prevent suicide, do not take the phone away. If your kid is struggling with their phone, if they're addicted to the phone and you can tell that it means so much to them. And I think parents are looking at this, like maybe there's some trauma bonding. Maybe it's not trauma of a guy taking his life and they're all talking about it and they're all coming together. Speaking of trauma bonding, what day is today? Are you kidding me?
Right.
9/11. Talk about like national trauma bonding. We all watched that video. We still can watch it. And what did that do? Like 9/11. I mean, if anything brought our country together to then all buy off on wars we should have never got into.
Oh goodness.
And and bombs that were dropped and people like we don't talk about that. And that's political. Whatever. Holy crap, that brought him together, right?
Yeah.
Like, no wartime president has ever been impeached or, like they've always won their re-election, no matter how crappy they were. And maybe that's happened on social media. Maybe that's happening when kids are being exposed to bad stuff and they go to school and they talk about it. And maybe it's not a huge thing, but maybe it's, like, a little thing. Maybe it's the bullying of a friend where everyone saw it on Snapchat and they're all talking about it. Or maybe your daughter got bullied on Snapchat and people are talking about it and, you know, coming together and, like, helping her through it and stuff. And it's like, oh, my gosh, that... You know, maybe kids are not realizing that it's not the phone and parents, maybe it's parents aren't realizing that it's not the phone the kid is addicted to.
Right.
Maybe it's each other.
Right.
What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, it's they're going through something together that tends to if you just apply that to anything, that creates relationships. Now, if you go through something traumatic together
or illegal
or sure,
which has been proven through studies, and yes, I've done my research. I haven't at
Joe. Oh, good.
Okay. DM Joe on that one, which is proven though. Like, you know, I remember seeing that, and I remember it was reinforced, of course, from Marvel, right?
Or sure.
Was it when Far From Home, Spider-Man, when they all decided before the debate team thing to go like jump in the hotel hot tub before like after hours, and the girl's like, I did research where it said that if the team does something kind of illegal the night before, it builds camaraderie, which helps us all win tomorrow. And I'm like, well, maybe that's part of the reason why kids are so hooked to each other on these devices and these apps, because they all know kind of deep down that what they're seeing and being exposed to probably is a little out of their age grade, right?
I can definitely see that. Sure. And it can get into that kind of development of pecking order. It can get into... it's kind of that one-upsmanship.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm an adult because
I can handle this.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm the only 14-year-old here who saw the video and didn't puke instantly.
Right.
And they tell their friends about it. Yeah.
Yep.
So, to get your kids off TikTok, I don't know what I need to tell parents who are on it. Of course, the parents who give their kids this and just don't even think or look at it are the parents who... Don't listen to us, but
you know what I have said in the past. When I have a parent that I'm working with their teen, and they aren't really feeling like putting any sort of boundary on social media, I give them the challenge of spending the same amount of time and energy on social media as their child.
Wow,
that tends to give perspective pretty quick.
And the thought process behind that is what? It's not just going a mile in your kid's shoe here, right?
It's firstly, there's the amount of time and energy that is put into a singular TikTok video.
So much time.
And the parents may see that as being like, oh, you know, it's just a little hobby, it's a little thing they're doing. But if you're doing that, like even just a week, that's exhausting.
It is.
That's you are your own production company at that point.
You really are. You're the editor, the PA, the cameraman. We were at the pool for a niece nephew party, and parents always talk about this. I was at the beach, and these kids didn't even. They were doing TikTok videos for like 2 hours till they got the first one. And I'm like, imagine being a part of this culture where like that's what they do because that's what all their friends do. Like,
yeah.
exhaustion. Another word I learned this last week from actually an 18-year-old kid I had on the podcast, Jack. He talked about as a high school, he just graduated high school. He said that part of his reason to get off, especially video games, what he was super hooked to, and social media, and when he was a senior in high school, was decision exhaustion. Is that the word he used? I think that's what he said.
Decision fatigue?
Decision fatigue.
Yeah.
And he kind of talked about that. So on your, since I don't know, I mean, I kind of think I know. What does that mean, and how does that relate to these teenagers that parents are trying to raise? Ooh. And they feel like, I don't even know what my kid is. Like, literally, what are they doing? Why are they so stressed out? They literally wake up, go to school. I went to school, hang out with friends. I hung out with friends, come home. I did that. How come they're so sad, depressed, and exhausted all the time?
Oh, that is a massive question. So let me try to unpack what I can there. So first of all, decision fatigue. Actually, my favorite example of this, I went to a grocery store and I was just buying like garbage bags, and I went to where they have garbage bags.
You're like, there's one brand of garbage bags probably.
And there were 10 cents of garbage bags. I just wanted a garbage bag. Yep. I don't need it to smell like trees.
I don't,
or flowers or fresh laundry. I don't know how long I stood there looking for a bag.
Maybe my garbage needs to smell like lavender, I think. Right? Maybe that would help.
There are just so many choices. I probably am thinking about trash wrong.
What's wrong with me? I've never really thought about trash. You know what my big one with that is not the trash, is freaking yogurt.
Yogurt, okay. Yes.
When? Yes. Why? When did we decide we need 700 brands and types of yogurt? They have yogurt that helps kids grow.
Sure.
They have yogurt that helps people go poo.
Yeah.
Where's my yogurt? You know what I'm saying? Like, which Cullen's one? Where's yogurt. My yogurt? So this is fatigue, but imagine being a teenager, especially like older teen or college kid, who not only are you doing school and friends, and now parents put you in six extracurricular, sports and soccer and piano and dance, because every kid's got to be on Ellen one day.
And you got to be in some clubs in there.
And you got to be in clubs. But then on top of that all, you have your own personal brand across multiple platforms that you have to constantly mold and massage and share and follow up on. Like, that's exhaust. That's decision fatigue.
And then if you don't like one of your personalities that you've kind of cultivated, well, then you have to create another profile, but you can't dump the first one. So now you have two different personalities that you're entertaining on social media.
So I've got my fancy, like, you know, I got major swag, major drip, you know, my Instagram one, but then I'm like, wait a second, I'm also got this like funny meme sharing side. Now I got to share the memes too. Mm-hmm. Now I got a meme account. Now all these people are depending on me to make a meme every day of the school or the principal or the class people or whatever. And I got to be the meme guy too now.
Yeah. It's like they're working a full-time job.
Oh my gosh.
Of social media outside of their actual job of school.
Yeah. And those accounts that if you're an advertiser or a brand, like, you have a staff running that. You've got a team. And these kids are doing it on their own.
Yeah.
So, geez, decision.
And now, and remember that whole, like, consequential reasoning thing?
Yeah.
That's that there's a delay in the development of that.
Yeah.
So not only are there these thousands of decisions, extra decisions, and pressures that I didn't have growing up. No. I'm 32. They have all these extra decisions to make, all these extra things on their plate, and their consequential reasoning, their critical thinking is delayed. Yeah. So they are less able to even make the decisions that are on their plate.
So they are faced with 100,000 times more decisions than we ever were faced with at that age, with the same car parts that we had to build the car.
No wonder they want to numb out.
Yeah. No wonder TikTok. There's an ad that I saw. Someone shared it with me. Like, look at this ad for TikTok. And it was an old, like no hair, beard, like small looking Santa guy. And it said, escape to TikTok. Or it said, escape to TikTok. Like, it literally said, escape to, like, that's how they're advertising. Escape here. Escape what? Escape the everything. All the hatred, all the crap, all the anger, all the problems, all the stress. Like, no wonder kids are on this all the time.
And what are they escaping to?
Yeah.
WAP.
WAP. And for those of you who don't know what WAP is a song. WAP? Is it WAP or WAP? Who knows?
And it doesn't matter.
Can we just share about this for a second? Because I got a lot of parents like, I cannot believe the lyrics. For those of you who don't know, it's a Cardi B song, and it's and the lyrics are spicy.
Zesty, one might say.
They are very zesty. if that song was in the trash can aisle, it would be like poop flavored sniff fart type bag, not lavender.
No, that type of music is not exactly new.
That's the thing I'm trying to say is like, parents are like, I can't believe female rap artists are singing about their genitals. It's like, have you ever heard a guy rap song?
Yeah, like, this isn't new. Now, what is new is like, I remember I wanted a, what was it? Gorillaz. Back in middle school, I wanted a CD from the Gorillaz.
Yeah, yeah.
And I couldn't drive yet. So my mom took me to a music store, and the only Gorillaz CDs required parents to sign off.
Yeah.
And because there was vulgarity in it.
So they actually made parents go in there and sign off on this. Isn't that crazy?
And she did not.
And she did not.
And I did not get my Gorillaz CD. Now
they wouldn't give it to you.
No,
you can walk in at that same age into a freaking vape store without a parent now.
Yeah,
like literally, if you wanted to.
And so,
remember the music video for Feel Good?
Oh yes,
where it started off like this with like a Grand Theft Auto scene. This was good. What year did this come out?
I don't even know.
So, anyways, back to that story.
So now there is such easy access. I mean, it's not like these teenagers have to prove their age to listen to WAP, to listen to any song that historically wouldn't have been appropriate for those under age 18.
They don't have to search for it. It just kind of shows up next in their Spotify or shows up next on their Amazon Music, and it's just there for them. Yeah. I have mixed feelings. Obviously, the song is awful. The lyrics are horrible. And the parents who typically are shouting the loudest about that, their own daughters are in their basement on TikTok doing a dance to WAP while they're yelling about it on Instagram. So, but anyway, so what were we going to talk about first off? That was so fun. Now, I think you were...
I know lots of things, don't I?
We were talking about... something to do with like authentic identity?
Oh, sure.
Remember that?
Yeah.
You deal with a lot with the generation that I love so much, which is like that like 18 to 23 year old guy, girl, who's just like, this is a whole new like beast, these types of kids.
Right.
I love them because there's so many cool things about them. They're just tolerant. They're sick of the BS. Mm-hmm. Most of them don't have driver's licenses at all by 22. Like a lot of them haven't even been on an actual date yet. And it's like my lyrics to one of my favorite songs by Lauv. Love you, Ari, if you're listening, which I'm sure you're not, called Modern Loneliness, where one of the lyrics to that song is modern loneliness, always, never alone, but always depressed.
Uh-huh.
This generation that has never been alone, socially, digitally, always talking to people, socially, digitally, but the most depressed generation ever.
Right.
And clueless who they are. And where they fit in this world.
And let me emphasize that point. That was not you blowing something out of proportion. This is Gen Z is the most diagnosed depressive and anxiety in
history.
Generation, even compared to those in the Great Depression.
Even during the Dust Bowl, they had more. It's probably because they didn't have this music back then. Oh my gosh. I don't remember this music video I'm watching right now. The whole thing was animated. It was so good. Literally better than most Disney animations I've ever seen. But no, for sure. They diagnosed the most depressed, anxious, mental health ridden. And some of that is because we are talking about it more.
Yep.
And so kids feel like they can now say, oh, that's why I feel this way.
Mm-hmm.
But let's talk about this. You have a lot of clients like this that fit into this age and struggles. And what are some of the things you see and some issues that are the common denominator with a lot of these kids?
Yeah. So if we just look at development, at the tail end of those teenage years, individuals are stepping away from kind of a group mindset and beginning to develop their own personality. That's why, like, you know, in high school and middle school, you'll see some kid comes in, he's dressed up like a stereotypical, like, ranch hand, and then the next day he's all goth. because he's gotten a new friend group.
I was this the whole time. Yeah, yeah.
So hive mind begins to disappear at the end of teenage years, and that individual identity begins to really formulate and take hold and emerge.
Yeah.
So I don't know if this is a new thing. I don't know if we've ignored it in the past or whatever, but it's like there's a bit of a hiccup there. And so a lot of people are asking themselves, who am I? Why are things not working?
Yeah.
They're realizing they've been given a script since they were born. They're following this script. They're doing all the things. They're joining all the clubs.
Yeah.
And they maybe even going into college and they're taking all the classes and then they get their bachelor's and then they're jobless and they're like, what?
Wait, this is not what my, no, where's
I'm not in an utter state of happiness. What happened?
How am I not a director level VP with a 150K year job and a house that looks like the ones on HGTV?
But we can't blame them.
Yeah.
That whole thing of you can be anything you want to be. You just gotta, you know, work. And the recipe that was given to them was, get a bachelor's.
Just get a, if you can just get a bachelor's, life will just take care of itself.
Yeah, nope.
Yeah. And the poor kids just getting, you know, participation trophies since they were five, 6 years old, right? Yeah. Every kid who strikes out gets a bigger cheer than if they get a base hit. You know, you did it, Billy, right? So I like how you said that they were handed a script. This was not something they wanted.
No.
It was given to them.
They followed the instructions, and what came out was not what they were told.
Yeah.
And so there's a kind of underlying sense of betrayal, but it's a betrayal to, like, rather from society.
Yeah. Do you feel like that's part of the reason why there's so much hatred and anger and protesting?
Sure.
Is that, you know, the more I think about that, it's like, okay, let's talk white privilege for a second, right? As a white person in America, I should have... Everything should be easy, and it was easy for my parents, and everyone, you know, there's no issues, and suddenly I'm a bachelor degree, or I graduate high school, and it's like, I work for the city, no offense, and I make, what's going on? Like, why do I not have money? Why is this a struggle? Like, I'm a white American. Like, do you feel like that has something to do, the fact that a lot of these people who saw everything kind of work out well for their parents and their grandparents, and for them, it's suddenly not working out, and they're like, wait a second.
Right.
I'm an American.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. If you, those who are listening, if you want kind of a little bit more framework to understand your kids, and depending on your age a little bit, you might need to connect with some of the millennial generation. You might need to connect with some of the Gen Z generation.
Yeah. Millennial generation. Millennial is the Harry Potter kids.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah.
There you go. So anyone who still freaks out about Harry Potter, pretty close to millennial. Yeah.
Yeah. That's probably pretty accurate, actually. So what you can do, jump on to YouTube and search for like key events of Gen Z or key events for millennials. And you'll be able to see what major events have kind of formulated that generation.
Yeah. 9/11 was one of the first things they remember.
Yep.
Right? So a lot of these kids were 4, 5, 6, 7 when 9/11 hit.
Yeah. So there's a lot of disenfranchisement.
That's a good one. Yeah. Meaning what?
Well,
pissed off kids.
Angsty.
Angsty. Yeah, that's the word.
Yeah. It's like, oh, I've been handed this really awesome present and there's nothing in it.
Oh, every day of my life, there's a present waiting for me. I open it up.
Hooray.
And
oh, nothing.
It's empty still. Yay. And by the way, my $40,000 in student loans, I've paid $40,000 off on and I still owe $50,000. Woo.
Yeah. There's this whole thing where our society, westernized society in general, really preaches this state of happiness.
Yeah,
I like to be...
constant happiness.
Oh, yes.
That's the rage.
A bliss. I like to be a little bit of a downer here and say the pursuit of happiness is a lie. nice sound effect there.
The pursuit of, but that's not what Will Smith said.
Yeah,
in bless his heart. Movie.
I mean, that's a nice movie, but there is no point at which you will be fully happy.
Yeah.
All these individuals are trying to create that state, and the only way that they can get it really is numbing out on something.
Yeah.
That actually is a state of happiness.
For sure.
Literally. You're so just dripping with dopamine and serotonin that You're not feeling any other emotion.
Yeah.
So when I'm working with especially these older teenage, early adult, honestly, even getting into their 30s now, I'm looking at this piece of feel all the emotions. That's a big thing.
Meaning what? That they aren't used to feeling all the emotions, or they're just constantly bombarded with emotions?
Well, it depends a little bit on the age. They're not allowed to feel the emotions, especially guys. Especially guys.
For sure.
Guys are allowed, like, kind of like diet happiness, where it's not actual. And we're allowed anger. Anger is like just pure rage. We're allowed.
Just be mad all the time. Yeah. Right? Just mad. And if you don't like how the world's changing, you know how you fix it? Go into your truck, turn on Facebook Live, and just bloviate everything you're ticked off about. Right?
And that will change everything.
That'll fix it for you. Yeah.
So teaching people to recognize and effectively express fear, disgust, and sadness.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah, Inside Out.
I've got a Bing Bong right there.
Yeah.
He's listening. So being able to express all those feelings.
To learn how to actively recognize them and express them effectively. That is a huge, huge part of being a healthy human being.
Yeah.
So that's part of this. Now, there's also this cool little system that I have kind of assembled through a almost like psychology Frankenstein.
Sounds super legit.
Yeah, mashing together several different theories to kind of.
This was actually his PhD thesis right here. Yeah.
So it comes out of this thing that's called self-determination theory.
Okay.
Now, self-determination theory was actually created to talk about what's called intrinsic motivation. And that's it's sort of motivation coming from inside of you based on your values, based on your, in some cases, passions.
Okay.
Extrinsic would be someone's giving you a reward or someone is pushing you to do it.
Third party.
Yeah.
Not internal, or as you smart people call it, intrinsic.
Intrinsic.
And you have to say it like that. Intrinsic.
Yes. Yeah. As if you've just bitten into a lemon.
Just like the dog you have, which is a what kind?
King Charles Cavalier Spaniel.
King Charles Cavalier Spaniel.
Is it Cavalier King Charles? I forget it.
But the type you have, the coloring is called a what?
It's called a Blenheim.
A Blenheim. I can just hear the British Downton Abbey just like melt off your tongue.
Yes.
Blenheim. Okay, back to
self-determination theory. So if you Googled this, you'd find a whole lot of application to like corporate environments.
Okay.
It's a lot of trainings for employers to help motivate employees. It's very boring.
Yeah.
So the core of it is this argument that through competency, connection, and authenticity, we create a sense of purpose, a sense of contentedness, and ultimately intrinsic motivation.
Intrinsic.
Now, that's the sort of downfall is... it doesn't get very specific in how one does that. So there's a lot of different people who say, well, to develop competency, you do this. To develop effective connection, you buy my program.
Yeah.
And yada, yada.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
So I'll give you my thoughts and I will practice some of that wise doubt here so I can totally be wrong.
Let's do it.
In fact, if you hear this and you're like, yeah, but what about... Please feel free to DM me because, like I said, I kind of concocted this.
I'll be ready with this every time you mess
nice.
Up.
Oh, nice. Nice. Great. So, competency. Let's address that one first. This is the easy one.
Yeah.
Most of the time that we are running into issues in our life, it's because we are actually incompetent. We don't have enough competency.
That's not what my parents told me.
Well, hopefully your parents don't tell you that you're incompetent.
Yeah. They just say you're the smartest kid in class, Billy. But I flunked it. Oh, the teacher's wrong.
So, competency, it's your confidence in your ability to perform a task.
Okay.
Now, I guess I should also throw in there, see, that's already wrong. It's not just confidence. It's effective. It's true confidence.
Okay.
So it's not just, you know, I feel swell. It's no, you can actually back it up. You have the knowledge, you have the expertise.
For sure. Like when my daughter the other day said, Dad, I can fry an egg really well, can I? I was like, actually, yeah.
Sweet.
The first like 7 you did, that was awful. I'm just going to say this.
No, but by yeah,
by the eighth,
competent.
That actually looked pretty good. Yeah, yeah. Good job.
So connection. These fall into three realms. I take these from, it's called the Gestalt approach. Yes, it's Austrian.
It's actually Gestalt.
Oh, Gestalt.
Thank you.
Yes.
Just kidding.
So Gestalt, it's this theory that's all about wholeness.
Okay.
So it argues that a healthy human being is connected to self, connected to other, and connected to something spiritual.
Okay.
So self, this is what us therapist folk really like to talk about because it's like, you know, self-care.
Yeah.
That's learning about self, being able to learn about and think about your thoughts and emotions. That's all self.
Okay.
Other is a very large area. That's everything outside of you. So you could look at relationships. Mm-hmm. These are friends, family, work, community, any organization or group you're a part of. This could also go into finances, into education, all these things that are, again, outside of you.
Yeah.
Spiritual, this one gets people heated, so I'll just be brief on this. This isn't specifically referring to a religion. This is referring to your connection to something grander, greater, ideally something more benevolent than yourself.
I'm spiritual, but I'm not religious, says everyone these yeah. days, right? That's one of the things about the Gen Z, as I look up my studies, so don't at me, is that there's very, in this group of Gen Z, less religious identification.
Yeah.
In 1966, 6% of incoming freshmen and college, obviously, reported being unaffiliated with religion. By 3 years ago, it was 1/3.
Mm.
So,
yeah. So, connecting with, you could think of this more vaguely as sort of life philosophies, but being able to ponder about life and death, and being connected to that.
Yeah.
Now, lastly, we have authenticity.
Hold on the, on that yes. one though. What connection also relating to relatedness, right?
Sure.
Is that a piece of it too? If you don't want to just only think of connection, like relatedness, experiencing a sense of belonging.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, because a lot of people think connection is like, people are so disconnected. They don't have a lot of friends.
Mm.
It's like, or meaning or attachment to people or a feeling of belonging, right? Let's
right.
go Brene Brown here. She's all about belonging, but I think that's one thing that's really affected these young people, and that's, again, the script that was handed to them is like, oh, remember the old days where we grew up where, like, there was neighborhoods and there was villages mm-hmm. and you could just go hang out and there's mm-hmm. neighborhood barbecues, and now no one does. I mean, that's rare.
Yeah.
That's why I love watching those, like, Chef's Table and those, like, places, those, like, documentaries where, like, there's this really good cook and all the neighbors come over, like, he does barbecue for, like, the whole city, and it's just like, oh, I miss that.
Yeah, isn't that great?
These kids don't get it.
No.
So, but they can on, you know, maybe an Instagram group or maybe some, like, alt-right Facebook group.
Yeah, they get a sense of connection.
Yeah.
They get a sense of connection from there. So, yeah, you're right. That true connection that's a little bit deeper than like I have a phone number.
yeah you have a Snapchat account. I too have one. Let's be friends.
Done.
Yeah
That's not what that's referring to. No.
Okay.
And that actually that gets into this third piece, which I think is the heavy hitter, that is authenticity. Mm-hmm. So there are many arguments around what makes something authentic. I kind of mash up a couple of them. Like, this whole thing is just mashed. It's just a mashed theory.
The listener can put it together their own way.
That's right. So, under authenticity, we have action, what you do matters. We have expression, or what you say, what you express matters. Uh-huh. And then we have inspiration, what you dream about, what you think uh-huh. about for the future, that it matters. And then lastly, we have suffering and possibility.
Okay.
So, we can look at this applies really easily to finding a job.
Okay.
So I could look at, I like to joke about this. So when I was in my master's, I really liked reading about casinos
yeah.
and the sort of psychology and kind of creepy research that's been done on people and behaviors to influence gambling behaviors.
Well, because they turn grown adults and old people into like literal lab rats.
Yes.
Like you put the video of the lab rat touching the thing to get the hit of cocaine,
right?
Like side by side of the old lady, like just a card plugged in, attached to a wire to her chest. Cause she doesn't have to like, she can't even take the time to put the coins
right
in
button.
It just button. It looks exactly the same. But honestly, it looks like the rat is having more, a better time.
Yes. Doing it, right? So yeah. From this research in casinos, like you can find tons of research just on slot machines.
I bet.
So they have it down to like, if these ones go off, actually pay out at this rate, and these ones light up at this rate, and these ones make these sounds at this rate.
Yeah.
They will increase the number of people coming in and spending money. Amazing. It's nuts. As a side note, this is actually part of the reason why we have a diagnosis of, is it internet gaming addiction?
Yeah.
It's because they're similar algorithm.
Yeah.
Anyway.
They hired actually Jaron Lanier, who's one of the godfathers of virtual reality. He's the coolest speaker. He's this like big dude with dreadlocks that drag on the floor. And he's in all the like, you know, Tristan Harris type documentaries where it's like how social media is destroying our species. He's super rad. Look him up, Jaron Lanier. But he talks about that in one of his like 17 TED Talks where he said so he was in Silicon Valley when this all started. And he said when we started building these apps, social media, stuff like that, and virtual reality and games, that everyone started to hire programmers and software developers that worked in Vegas. And he said this, and I had the quote in one of my parent nights I used to share, where he said, "We brought them to Silicon Valley to work on this technology, on phones, social media apps, all this stuff, turning them into digital slot machines." And he said, "And then Vegas got mad because we used that to make more money than Vegas did."
Huh.
And they have. You thought casinos were worth money? You think a casino makes money? Snapchat, an app used for sexting. That's it.
Yeah.
An app with silly filters and to sext was, when it IPO'd, was worth more than JW Marriott's hotel empire.
Wow.
I wanted to dig J-Dub up. Is he dead? I don't know. And say, hey, you know all your things that say Marriott? Buildings and all across the world are worth less than an app where you can send nude photos. Like, it's crazy.
Wow.
So they absolutely have tied those two things into it, for sure.
Yeah. So, well, and so from that, I really...
I always mess you up, and then he's like, how do I segue this one?
So I... Back in my master's, I really enjoyed reading on that kind of stuff. And chances are these days I would be reading on that.
Yeah.
There was a period where I thought about going into research on those kind of things, just because I enjoyed reading on it so much. But we can figure out, if we look through this authenticity piece, we can figure out why I did not.
Yeah.
So what I do matters. All right, so if I took this job of conducting research on increasing gambling behaviors, I would be able to see the direct impact of my research, and I would be able to conduct the research. And so, yeah, what I do would matter in that case. I'm pretty sure I would feel that.
Yeah.
What I express matters.
Okay.
That depends a little bit on the location. I can kind of put that one up until like a maybe.
Yeah.
Because, if I'm working for a good, head researcher, he's going to hear me out. He's going to, or she's going to hear my thoughts, my opinions. And ultimately, I'm going to be able to publish research on it. So yeah, some degree of expression, sure.
Yeah.
And then lastly, inspiration. Oh yeah, sure. Absolutely. My more sadistic side would come up with like, some mazes and such to put people through to get a slot machine. Yeah, that seems really interesting. But
so you're saying that the people who go into this field are sadists? Well, kind of.
Maybe
a little.
Maybe. They're allowed to challenge me on that.
At joedennis.counsels.
That actually would be kind of interesting conversation. Yeah. Now, the thing that does it for me is that fourth piece. Remember, this was suffering versus possibility.
Yeah.
Again, unless you have something seriously wrong, arguably with your brain, you do not want to cause more harm than you do create possibility for those in your life.
Gotcha.
You just don't. So if, as I look through this scenario, I would be creating greater suffering than I would be creating possibility. And that is beneficial, long-term, healthy relief. So that would not be an authentic position for me to take.
Okay.
There's that conclusion.
Yeah.
So the way you would be able to kind of plug various issues around identity, around work, around family, whatever, into this system, chances are you're going to start with a sensation that something is off. Mm-hmm. Maybe you're going to be burning out. You're going to be depressed. You're going to be anxious. Your sleep is going to be awful.
Yeah.
So then you have to take an inventory, a very honest inventory, going through connection first. So in the way you're taking care of yourself, how you're investing your time, are your actions mattering?
Yeah.
Do you feel like what you do matters there?
Yeah.
Do you feel like what you are communicating matters? Do you feel inspired by those things that you're doing to take care of yourself? By the way you are connecting to yourself. Mm-hmm. Are you creating greater suffering for yourself than possibility?
Check.
And so if you're
at least during Corona.
Yeah, I got self. Well, yeah. Then you get other. Mm. So then you have to look through, okay, with my friends, am I authentic?
Yeah.
With my family, am I authentic? Mm-hmm. With my work, am I authentic? With school, with all these things, am I checking these boxes?
Yeah.
And with spirituality, same thing. Now, chances are, as you're going through this, you will come across an area where maybe you're like, well, no, I am not inspired by this at all.
Yeah. A lot of times that's work, especially for these younger generation.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know what it was, but like, it seems like our grandparents could like do this like 60-year crappy job and like not, I mean, we weren't there to ask them like, do you hate your life? I mean, obviously we probably realized that after we saw how much they drank and then screwed up our parents who screwed us up. But it seems like, I don't know, it seems like this all kind of started changing. Obviously with the script these kids were given,
yeah,
that life has to be happy, happy, happy all the time. That, you know, I hear a lot about like these young people coming out of college and they get a job and like in 6 months they're like, I'm done. I'm burnt out.
Yeah.
I don't want to be here. I'm not like
sure
changing the world every second and fulfilled like happiness. So I'm going to. That means I don't want to be here anymore. And
right.
And then they leave and they never find it.
Yep. That's heavily impacted by, that sense of inspiration.
Yeah.
We want to be inspired by what we do and who we are and the things around us. So.
My grandpa drove a Greyhound bus from Albuquerque, New Mexico to Tucson, Arizona every week for decades. That's it. Like,
wow.
I can't even imagine. But that's just what their whole neighborhood did.
Yeah.
That guy did the plumbing. That guy drove the bus. That guy, and they just did it, right?
Uh-huh.
So obviously, this is like a shift in culture.
Something.
Which has, I think, has been great. I think it sucked and great. Maybe after like the 2 or 3 generations, we'll have this all figured out. But right now, it's growing pain times for a lot of these kids.
Totally. So what's got to be done with this is when we notice that something's off, we got to consider, okay, well, what can I do to get things back in line,
yeah,
to make things right. And if you don't know what to do, that means you are incompetent.
Bow, 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 bow.
Yep.
No, I'm not. I'm just, I'm not incompetent. I just have bigger goals than this.
So if you have issues with your competency, it's honestly, it's a pretty easy fix. It's just, well, learn stuff.
Go learn stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Talk to people that are, that you look up to. Talk to your therapist.
Go get a therapist, or don't. Just go get lost on get lost in TikTok. This is me dialing my therapist.
In a lot of cases where someone is not feeling inspired by something, they don't have perspective.
Yeah.
So I'll talk with clients about, all right, you know, you're working this job now because it's giving you this specific skill set,
yeah,
which will boost your resume so that you can get this other job along the line.
This is just a comma in your life, not a period.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. I had a job I feel bad for the company.
Oh no!
I had a job doing marketing. This was so I had think of it as like I'd been through residency for therapists.
Gotcha.
So I'd made it through that. I had my license. I was working at this little like private practice, and then I take a job doing marketing for this national company, and the company then is paying me to go all around primarily Utah, but even going to Vegas at one point to market their
gambling products to old people.
Woo. To market their rehabs, primarily rehabs.
Oh, gotcha.
And I think I was able to send them one client in the period of time I worked for them. I was not a very effective marketer. However, the reason that I took the job was that I was getting paid to network.
Yeah.
And I knew that in the life of a therapist, networking is huge.
Yeah.
So I'm getting paid to network. I'm getting paid to do something that I know is going to benefit me professionally anyway.
Foundation building. Yeah.
So did I like the job? For the most part, no. I did like the free food. I will absolutely confess that. Like, why people didn't, like, I would seriously just call rehabs being like, who wants to get lunch with me? No, I'm not selling you something.
Like, literally, if you don't buy, I really don't care. But I have a card that the company gives me. Do you want sushi? What do you want?
Pretty much. So why people didn't hit me up, I don't know. But
do you still have the card?
Pretty sure they canceled that.
I worked at a big, I want to say which one, a big software company that creates creative products in a cloud. Anyways.
Yeah.
And I had a company card once and I quit there and I was like, I wonder if this thing still works. And I was like, I'll just try it like on a drink. Didn't work.
Oh.
Like, they got 10,000 employees. Like the guy in charge of shutting off the cards is on that on top of it. The next day I can buy a drink.
Yeah.
How do you work with someone, or what is your advice to the, what is your advice? Cause the audience that listens to this is parents and then, a couple of you in Canada. Just kidding. A
couple of my fellow Canadians.
Oh yeah. That's right.
Yeah, nice.
Where are you from again?
BC.
That's right. Yeah.
British Columbia.
The BC. One of my favorite people is in British Columbia.
Well, Amanda, that's a good Amanda. Part of Canada.
She does cool lettering stuff. What is your advice to parents out there who have that like angsty 18-year-old who's like freaking out because now it's adulthood coming around the corner and he's so mentally, because the script we gave them, they are not ready for this. But he's feeling all the pressure and the stress of holy crap. And of course he wants to avoid, distract, deflect, and just retreat into his bedroom and play the video games because there he can accomplish. There he can control. There he can create and destroy and build and break and be a hero. I talk a lot of moms who are freaking out about their son, especially like that.
Yeah.
What do they do then? Besides just kick him over to you, but you have finite time to fix the kids.
I mean, especially if it's getting to the point where they are dysfunctional, where there's issues with sleep, there's suicidal thoughts, where they can't keep work, where they can't keep grades, they probably should, in all seriousness, speak directly with a therapist.
Yeah.
And I really need to emphasize that.
100%.
Now, that said, what you can do as a parent, because you should not be doing therapy with your children.
But I read a book. Tell me how you, hold on,
goodness.
Feel.
Yeah.
That's why there's therapists. That's why my wife, sitting next to you, this is where she studies. She's 39, and the kids are in school pretty much full-time now, and she's going back to get your same degree in master's, which thank you for helping us figure out what would be, because that same thing, right?
Yeah. So know your limitations. That's one thing.
Yeah.
But have honest conversation with your kids. Yeah. They aren't dumb. They probably need time to think through things. If they go, I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, okay, fine. Take it as I don't know. But
yet.
There you go.
Yeah.
Set a time to go over it.
Yeah.
Whatever the question is. Like, we're going to sit down. We're going to go through this. We're going to think about what we're going to do.
And don't forget that kid up until that point before high school graduation, like, just was just coasting through. And when you ask him, what are you going to do for the next 50 years of your life, Connor? He's going to say, I don't know, because he really has no clue.
Yeah.
And then he's going to freak out, and then he's going to retreat, and he's going to go get lost in TikTok or Minecraft. Just kidding. Do older kids play not Minecraft, or just young kids?
I don't know.
Clash or whatever they're playing. But okay, so for the parent where the son's not that dysfunctional yet.
Yeah.
But she's seeing signs, right? And she's worried.
So have open conversation, talk about interests. They need to experiment.
Yeah.
That is a huge thing. It's terrifying for parents because that means that they're going to fail at lots of things.
Yeah.
But that's a positive thing.
Experiment with what, though? Not drugs. Like what?
Like all the drugs. Just line it up for them. No,
listening to Joe and Colin's thing. Here's LSD. Here's, I think, marijuana.
So, Colin. No. So.
My goal is to get you disbarred.
Right?
No. My job is to get more people to know how awesome Joe is. And help these parents. So
yeah, totally.
They need to experiment stuff, right?
Yeah. A big area for this is work.
Yeah.
Honestly, it is okay for your kid to have all sorts of jobs, to have a full array.
Yeah.
Now, that said, I mean, do encourage, like my parents encouraged me to try and keep a job for at least a year, because under that looks bad.
Yeah, yeah.
That is far more common now.
Yeah, sure.
But it is still a nice attempt to keep.
One of these companies I worked at, or maybe my friend worked at it, they said 18 months was like, this is a big software company. 18 months was turnaround time.
I believe that.
You know, going for a year, give it a hard year. If it's going well, give it 6 more months. By then, like, they're going to either cut your pay or you're not going to get the promotion you want. And you're going to get headhunted. You're going to go somewhere else.
Yeah. And even though this is absolutely going to sound kind of lame, personality tests. Like, people really enjoy taking them.
Yeah.
Just go ahead and take a ton of them. There's a lot of free ones. Take a bunch of personality tests.
So you don't have one you recommend? Just Google some.
Just Google them.
And the point of that, what?
Well, it looks into some of these ways that you may be thinking, some of these interests that you have.
Yeah.
There are, I forget what they're called. If you just Googled interest inventories,
okay,
I'm sure you could find various, essentially, personality tests.
I never did those.
Yeah.
I wish I did.
So this can give you some clarity. This can give you some ideas of what to look into. If there are internships, job shadows, those are gold.
I love it.
It gets someone a lot of exposure. Now, if you have a more adventurous teenager, you could do the whole leap year thing.
Leap year, gap year.
Gap year.
Gap year, yeah.
Not leap year. Thank you. Gap year.
Ladies and gentlemen, that is the first time speaking with Joe for 3 hours in two sessions where I was right.
Yes.
Where I had a gap year.
Yes, a gap year. Yeah. What we've found is that if people take a gap year, they are far more likely to complete college. They're far more likely to be invested in a major they actually want to be in.
Why is that, do you think?
They get clarity.
Yeah.
At that age, like 18-ish, it's that fresh point. Things are unstructured. And so that's both a positive thing and a negative thing.
For sure.
But yeah, if they want to take a year essentially trying it on their own, fine.
Yeah. Parents freak out thinking about that. I can hear the parents right now, like, sweating to death and squeezing that out, thinking, if I gave my son Dylan a year to do whatever he wants, like, the whole house is going to smell like weed. He's going to grow dreadlocks.
Probably.
Or he's going to join some alt-right troll group or something. Right? I don't trust, because parents don't trust their kids at that age.
And that means that you think your child is stupid.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yes, you have to trust that they have picked up something.
Yeah.
Something around morality, around values from, you know, the 18 years that you've been with them.
Yeah.
It's that they need to get out and try things on their own, to try out this thing called independence.
Maybe that's one of the fears that the parents have, is if I let that happen, that is going to be the biggest, most eye-opening performance review as me, the parent, right? Because, like, I had you for 940 Saturdays, which is all you get as a parent, 940 Saturdays to turn this into apprentice adult. And now I'm going to give you a year to figure out what you're doing. Like, that's going to be pretty scary for a lot of parents to see, like, how well of a job did you do or did you not do? Did you overparent? Did you underparent? Were you too authoritative? Were you too passive? Yeah. You know, see
and
what
there's
you're
no
do.
Way to know.
Yeah. So just do it, right?
Exactly.
I like this idea.
Yeah, it's going to be chaos. That's the whole point of early adulthood.
Did you do a gap year when you were 18?
No. School?
What do you think
totally,
you would
like?
What do you think you would have done in that year if your parents said you have 12 months or whatever you want before it's like either think of college or you know, whatever. What do you think you would have done?
So, okay, at that point in my life, I was wanting to go medical, and I was thinking about, actually, I was thinking about going back to BC for school. So I probably would have gone up there and attempted to live in BC for a bit.
You'd probably still be there.
Maybe.
Because if anyone's been there, it's hard to leave BC.
It depends.
Yeah.
Because like if I say I was living in Vancouver,
yeah,
an 18-year-old can't afford to live in Vancouver.
It's kind of pricey, yeah, yeah.
And so I probably would have moved back.
Yeah,
honestly.
Yeah. It is pricey there.
That would have been a hard reality. But it's those moments of discomfort that create perspective.
For sure.
It teaches people that they are resilient, that they can adapt.
I love
so many people are secretly afraid that they are incapable, that they cannot adapt to a situation.
Yeah.
So they have to prove it.
Yeah.
They have to overcome.
So parents, if you're listening, I think one take home there is let your kids do this younger, right? Don't wait till they're 18 to say, let's see if you have what it takes, pal. You know, 9, 10, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, whatever year they're at, like give them stuff to do so they can learn they can do it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Give them the credit card, tell them to go pick out some groceries and meet you at the checkout and see if they can do it, right?
Yep.
That's what we do a lot with our kids, you know, learning how to do stuff, learning how to talk to people, right? When we go to restaurants, my kids know that they have to look at the menu themselves. This is for my 14-year-old all the way down to my 6-year-old.
Mm.
They got to look at the menu. They got to find their own meal. And then they have to make eye contact with the lady and say please and thank you. And then that's it. And then I have them sign the credit card thing too. What do you guys want to tip? What do we do? Okay, well, we do this or that. Okay, and I have my kids sign it sometimes. Learn how to do dishes. Learn how to cook, right? How many of these poor boys are scared to be an adult because they're like, wait, if I leave the house, mm-hmm. I don't know how to make jack crap. Like,
yes.
And I can't afford Uber Eats on my own. Like, what am I supposed to do?
I have given assignments to cook things, like simple things. That was definitely one of the successes that my parents had with me is they taught me to cook. I did not eat ramen when I was in college.
You're like, ramen with a little bit of persimmon and beef Wellington.
That sounds awful.
That's probably not the best idea.
No, I had a whole lot of rice. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But
mixed with curry.
Actually, that's probably what? No.
No, curry's rice.
No, that'd be fantastic. That was the wrong button.
I don't think I have one. Let's see. Hold on, everyone. Hold on.
The suspense is killing me.
There we go. So parents listening, like, don't wait till they're 18 to start saying, okay, now mom's been doing it all for you.
Yeah.
Mom did your everything, got your job, got you into college, did your essays, did your packets when you graduated on time, and also cooked, cleaned, and took care of everything, and now go do it on your own. It's like, no.
Yeah.
I don't know how to.
And when it comes to further education past high school, firstly, your kids don't need to go to college. Let me absolutely say that.
Did you hear that?
Yeah.
What?
If they have no idea what they want to study, it is a huge waste of money and a huge waste of time.
If you don't believe me, sitting right over there on the corner is my college graduate. What is that called again? A diploma.
A degree.
Yeah, sitting over there just remind me that I got my degree in exercise physiology.
Oh, really?
Which I use all the time.
I can tell.
Like when I'm tight, when I'm speaking on stage and I grab a mic and I'm like, my thenar eminence is cramping. I use it all the time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I bet. And you know what? Pointing that out, I was thinking about that. Like, okay, so I hate TikTok, but I have a TikTok. I don't have the account, but I have the app so I can scroll through and see what's out there.
Mm-hmm.
So I couldn't show parents because parents don't want to look. And I've noticed something. That there's a lot of videos on TikTok that get a lot of virality, that a lot of people watch on the For You page, that are just guys doing cool manual labor.
Oh, right. Yeah,
tons.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a ton of videos of drywallers and drywall tapers and painters and any of these like ice road trucking jobs, you know? And people love watching those. I think that's probably a lot of it is because this generation of kids really like, my dream of becoming a doctor when it's $500,000 to go to med school now? Yeah, right. Like you can make good money doing these type of jobs, right?
I highly, highly encourage people to do some sort of like trade school or some sort of a certified program. That way, all right, if they love the work, then they can master that and they can build that, and that's good. That's fine. If they are like about it, and they get clarity that maybe they want to go be a doctor, well, now they're more able to afford it.
Yeah. That's true. If you are going to school and you are making $8.50 an hour flipping burgers versus $30 an hour, because you learned how to do masonry work or you learned how to paint houses, or window wash or any of that stuff that's all over TikTok, you know, I was wondering that, and now I figured out why this generation loves watching those videos. A, they're kind of like satisfying to watch someone like do a really perfect like swipe with some because if anyone knows, like I've hung drywall, it is literally the worst job on the planet.
I hate it.
Is there besides roofing in August, but
that would be death.
So let your kids. I think that's a big problem. You know, that parents are so freaked out about their kids getting the best college to go be a doctor, nurse, lawyer, that these poor kids are going to just.
Yeah.
So they're like, no, I don't want to do that. It's too stressful. And if you parent your kid from like age 12 to like, I already have your life planned out, buddy, which is a full ride scholarship for soccer, tennis, to then go to a D1 school, to then go get your medical degree and be a lawyer and bring us honor, whatever. That's a really hard place to be as a teenager. And honestly, when I think about the rate of teen suicide for boys, 5-1 girls, as far as completion.
Yep.
Girls attempt 4-1, boys complete 5-1.
Yep.
So for every 20 girl attempts, one boy completes. And I think a lot of that, besides they're more brave, is because of that stress.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think a lot of these boys are feeling like collateral damage to the pressures that their parents have put on themselves as parents to be perfect, to have amazing lives that they can showcase to the world, of course, on social media, that their kids are now feeling secondary pressures from their parents onto themselves.
Yeah.
I have to perform and be the best and do the best and crush it, score all the goals and ace all the tests and be the best person and never mess up on top of all that and maintain social media brands and maintain all this,
right?
Which is constant decision fatigue. I have to do all that for my mom or my dad. So no wonder if they do something stupid and get kicked off the football team and that identity is gone. They're like, I don't want to live anymore. Or no wonder they say, if I mess up once, I would rather die than go tell my parents that I just had sex with my girlfriend and they're going to realize that I'm not perfect, right? And if you don't believe me, parents, there is an actual letter that a boy named Patty wrote that he died after he wrote. It was a suicide note down in Southern California. Go Google it. Patrick, suicide note down at Corona Del Mar High School. And he says that in his thing. This kid was amazing. I have it. I share his letter. And he literally in his letter, this kid was like starting center fielder and he amazing family. And I mean, that high school is like one of the richest, best high school, like most amazing high schools as far as stats in the country. One of them.
Yeah.
And in his letter, he said, you know what? The pressure from school and from baseball and from the school to, you know, get the best scores, to get in the best schools and all the pressure and all this, it was too much.
Mm-hmm.
And he basically sent that letter. He's like, if the adults and the culture and society wants to keep putting this kind of pressure on kids, like this is what you're going to have to deal with.
Yeah.
And then he was gone.
That's absolutely accurate. Now I would say that the part of the discrepancy between suicides with males and females.
Yeah.
Females are raised in a culture where, don't get me wrong, there's plenty of downsides here, but they are raised more emotionally intelligent.
Big time.
So,
if you don't believe me, go to my kids' junior high. I have two girls in the junior high. Watch them come out of school and then watch the boys that age come out of school. There's quite the stark contrast.
So they're more able to recognize how things are affecting them.
Yeah.
They're raised with how to communicate that and how to express that, and it is acceptable. Guys are not.
Yeah.
And so what's happening, each of your emotions is an alarm system. Mm-hmm. And so if you're living life where you have, like I said before, diet happiness, where it's kind of like not entirely full-fledged.
Diet, I love that, diet happiness.
And you have this extreme anger going on, you're missing out on sadness. This is the emotion of connection. You're missing out on disgust. That is the emotion of boundaries.
Yeah.
You're missing out on fear, which is an emotion of fixing your environment. And so if you have cut those off, you're not going to be addressing all these issues that are going on around you.
Yeah.
So naturally, they're going to stack up, and boys especially are taught, you know, brush it off, walk
suck
it off.
It in.
Yeah. And so because they are being impacted so heavily by these emotions they're suppressing, they're then weak.
Yeah.
And if they're weak, well, then they're broken. And if they're broken, then they should off themselves.
Yeah. We need to do a whole nother podcast, if you wouldn't mind, come back on and just talk about this toxic masculinity and boys and emotions and things like that. Because you get a bunch of girls into a room and you put this song on, Inside Out, right?
Yeah.
And they're like, oh my gosh, I love that because I feel all those feelings. And the boys are like, I don't want to watch that. No, we're not supposed to talk about this
stuff.
That's
dumb.
Stupid. These freaking wusses, dude. And I feel like when we talk about this generation is going through a lot of growing pains, I feel like sadly that they are kind of like the generation that's going to be shifting so much of the sacred cows in our society, as mm-hmm. far as how mm-hmm. we are as people, as we are as men, and what's acceptable behavior and what's not. Like, you know, I think this generation and they're going to be martyrs to this to some degree. You know, look back and say, oh, you were the generation, we called you Gen Z, but you guys were the generation that changed, that now, like, dads go to therapy now. And, like, suddenly life's this utopian society. And people are okay talking about their feelings and talking about their mental health. And, like, guess what? We don't have a severe shortage of therapists because people accept mental health and there's no more stigma.
Mm-hmm.
And we have mental health clinics in high schools now and in middle schools. And there's not just like a school counselor, but there's trained therapists there.
Right.
If you go ask a lot of high school kids, especially say, hey, what's one thing you would like to change about the school? They'll go off on a list. But a lot of them will say, I wish we had some mental health resources here.
Mm-hmm.
And I go, well, you guys have counselors, right? Like, yeah, but no one wants to talk to them. Well, why not? Because they just talk about like grades and they stress us out more.
Yeah.
Like we need a therapist to sit there and help us like process emotions and stuff. So I would love to have you come back on. And talk about that. I think this was so awesome. Was there any pit? Was there a piece to that? Like, did I cut you off on like the three different?
I don't
things?
Know. I think you got it.
I think we nailed a lot of that. That was so fun because honestly, we were going to talk about something like I mean, this was great. This was like one of my favorite podcasts we've done. Being able to talk about that stuff. So you have the Blemen.
Yes.
King Charles.
I was like the what?
You said you're doing what? You're getting it. Therapy trained or something?
Therapy certified.
Okay,
yeah.
How does that work for real quick?
Yeah. So my dog, Georgia.
Oh.
Yeah, she's adorable.
So cute.
She is, we've put her through training so that she can pass this evaluation, which really, there's a lot of versions of stay, leave it, and come. Yeah. That's really the bulk of it.
Sure, yeah.
But a lot of it is personality, so the dog has to be obsessed with people and not, like, hyperactive. Like, one of the things that they'll dock you on is if the dog licks someone in the face.
Oh, boy.
Yep.
Don't show love. Like, what?
Not that way. The Cavalier Spaniel was bred to be a lap blanket for royalty.
And that's, and they look like that, obviously.
That's like her pastime.
King Charles Spaniel, Cocker Spaniel Blemen. Like, that's the most British royalty-sounding dog.
Which is why you have to say Blenheim.
And, like, even just saying the name of the dog sounds pretentious.
Yes. So, yeah. The evaluation we're actually going to put her through next month, I believe.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
And then what does that mean? You can take them on airplanes? Take her on airplanes? Is that what it is?
I need to get a little bit more clear, but from what I'm seeing, they actually have the same kind of protections as a service dog.
Yeah.
So, but it would mean when I'm seeing people in person again, she would be in the office with me laying on my clients.
I love that.
Yeah.
Every therapist needs a dog like
Agreed.
That.
Agreed.
Oh my gosh, yeah. There's one down the street here, the Greenhouse Center for Learning. I love the owner.
Oh,
the owners
yeah.
there. They're so cool.
Yeah.
And they have this massive, like, I forgot its name, but this giant, like, full standard poodle. Like, maybe it's a doodle, like a golden doodle poodle, but it's just huge, just lays. You walk in, it's just like, bleh,
it looks
I'm
like
here.
A Muppet.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. It looks like a human wearing a Muppet
yes.
costume.
Yes.
Because those dogs, when they look at you, like something about the golden doodle poodle, whatever.
They have human eyes.
They have very human eyes. It's like, and I'm always like, I know there's someone in there. Like, step out and just say, like, it's like when you see a mascot, you're like, or Mickey Mouse.
Please tell
like,
me you didn't let them,
say
like,
something to me.
See you do this to the dog.
No, I was talking to them.
Oh, okay, good.
I have conversations.
You're like,
with
step
dogs.
Out of that dog.
I'm like, I'm scratching its ears and I pulled in close. I'm like, hey, if you're in there, just say a word. Just blink, right? if there's a human in there wearing, anyways, dogs are the best. And I'm so glad that you helped me realize that we as humans are all just angsty dogs.
Yes.
Trying to survive, fight and fly right now.
And need pets.
Last question. Best advice for adults listening that are just stressed out with all the crazy hatred, anger, and chaos that's in the news that they can't put their phone down and they're constantly obsessed with. You know, parents are falling into this trap where they literally just get on Facebook now just to scroll past all the happy photos to find the one that ticks them off so they can comment and be angry.
Yes.
What is your advice to parents to handle the next 69 days before the election when if you think things are crazy now, wait.
Oh, how many fires will there be?
Seriously.
So firstly.
Antifa Airlines.
Oh, no. So firstly, recognize that is actually how your brain is wired. You're wired to focus on things that are negative. It's called negativity bias. Yeah. It's what prevents you from playing Russian roulette. Nice. So it's normal, firstly. So don't like get hung up on that. And don't shame yourself for like wasting another hour venting on Facebook. Instead, do something different. Yeah. The thing I've been echoing over and over and over and over again.
Over and over.
If you notice, like, let's say 2 days in a row, the same profile has gotten you venting at family members.
Yeah.
Unfollow them.
Good.
Or at least mute them. Do something so you're not reading their posts, because apparently they are affecting you.
Yeah.
Think of it as you have a finite amount of real estate that is your brain.
Yeah.
And you gotta use it wisely. And so you don't want to just give away this real estate to people who are going to, you know, dump toxic waste on it.
Which is what they are doing.
Yeah. So, yeah, if you find, this is what I do.
Yeah.
If you find a post that you are about to type into and be like, let me tell you the actual truth.
Yeah.
Nope. Instead, go to that profile and follow. Yeah. Just block it for now.
Mute it for a month.
Mute it.
Anything that's spicing you up, just mute it till November 4th.
Yeah, especially, you know, if it's family members, don't block it. Don't block it.
Just mute. Just mute so they don't think you unfollowed them.
Yep.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. Let's not lose family relationships over this. And, you know, some I don't even talk to my brother anymore. Why not? Because he was sharing stuff from PragerU too much. What? Yeah. Oh, QAnon. Like, just unfollow, and I've been saying that for years, unfollow the accounts of people that steal your joy.
Yes.
Go Marie Kondo. If there's a time to Marie Kondo your feed. And
yes, there you go.
And the things you consume. I love that's why they call it a feed. Like, oh, on my feed today. Like, we sound like horses.
Yes, what are you ingesting? I think that's appropriate.
I am ingesting a bag of toxic hatred, anger, and like your shirt says, hate is not a mountain.
That's right.
That was so cool. Thank you so much for coming on. If people want to reach out to Joe, they can go to your Instagram account, joedennis.counsels.
That's correct.
And he shares really stuff cool there. I'm sure you're booked out. And any idea when you're going to be able to meet with clients again face-to-face? I mean,
So what I'm looking for is when Salt Lake County is green again.
Okay. What are we, like beige? Or?
I think it's yellow right now.
It's a yellow, yeah.
So it was that orange. So
oh, that's good. That's a good direction.
So it's okay, we're cool. Getting there.
I cannot stress enough how much I would have loved to have seen a guy like Joe when I was transitioning from high school to college. And this is, I'm first year millennial. So like we were the, you know, that Gen Z, we were the trendsetters, right? But for your kids today, like every one of your boys, even if you think they're fine, give them a chance to go meet with some therapist, get some therapy sessions. Like it's a really hard time. Give them opportunity to say, hey, you might not have anything to talk about, but like, why not? Go talk to someone who's trained like Joe to be able to go through stuff and help process things. And don't freak out if your kid's like, you know what, mom, I need a gap year or a leap year, like you said.
Fine, they can leap during the year.
Which is 4 years, right? I need a gap leap year. It's like, wait, what? You're going to come back at 22 and then what? Oh, I don't know.
I don't know.
Maybe college. But anyway, so you can reach out to Joe. If you have any questions, you can reach out to me, Colin Karcher, on Instagram. Thank you so much for tuning in. I feel like this would be probably a good song to fade out. This is the clean version of WAP. Oh my gosh. Anyways, no, I can't do that. I can't do that. If you have any questions, if you have any comments, if you have anything, you can send me an email, which is heycolin@savethekids.us. That is not my outro. It's this one. Thank you so much, Joe. I really appreciate you coming in. You look super dope in your shoes. And enjoy that honey. It's got a little taste of persimmon on it, whatever that means.
Oh, yes.
And a little blemon. Go home. Go give your kids an ASIC, a hug. We'll see you next time. We'll Thank you.